What would save the world?
Veganism.
Gun control.
Ending capitalism.
Consensus.
More guns.
Nonviolent communication.
Energy.
Green energy.
Spirituality.
More regulation.
Emotional education.
End the war on
drugs. Libertarianism.
Socialism.
I'm Tuke Edelo, and this is
What Would Save the World on Radio Free Brooklyn every Wednesday from 3 to 4 p.m.
And today I am here with Elsa Waithe, who's an activist and comedian who I've wanted to have on here for a while, but there was scheduling conflicts, but now we figured it out. So she's here now.
Hi.
Hey. So we're going to talk about a couple things today, but we're specifically going to talk about Cop Watch, which is going to be
Wednesday, November 16th, from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. It's going to be at the Bureau of General Services Queer Division, and that's at 208 West 13th Street, room 210. And it's a really, really great thing that Elsa and Jose LaSalle host. Jose LaSalle is the founder of Cop Watch Patrol Unit. You're going to learn, or CPU, with the suggested donation of $5, but no one's going to be turned away. You learn about all about your rights and what the cops are actually allowed to do and what your rights are and how to legally observe all their activities in public places and learn how to exercise your rights safely and legally. It's great. I went to the one at the experiment this past week. It was very, very educational.
I want to know, like, what was your first taste of activism? Like, how did you get involved in activism?
I don't know. I think I've always been socially minded, you know, whether I was considering myself an activist or not. I was always socially conscious. I think it took a couple of things to iron out. I had a couple wrinkles in my shit. Facebook on this day reminds me often that I was problematic in certain ways. But I always had a mind for the world, I guess. Watching how the way of the world has been unfolding.
It's pretty scary right now, specifically.
Pretty scary right now. There's all sorts of different ways to you know, get your voice heard, your thoughts out there, get involved or whatever. But I took to, you know, immediately to sort of, you know, direct action and street action, street level protest or whatever is really what drew me.
When did you start doing that?
Late 2014, mm-hmm. Right after the Eric Garner and Michael Brown non-indictments came out, you know, they like came out like back to back, like
mm-hmm.
within a couple of days or like a week or something like that within each other, within, you know, in that little time frame. And so it was just like, you know, those two things back to back and still kind of like confused and stinging from Trayvon Martin.
Mm-hmm.
So
with the Black Lives Matter movement really got you into it specifically?
Yeah. I mean, I was always aware of the Black Lives Matter movement or like what it was since its, you know, inception after Trayvon Martin.
Mm-hmm.
But again, like I said, like Facebook on this day reminds me, I used to be problematic. I used to, you know, like, yeah, I understand systematic racism or like I know that exists or yeah, I know I've been affected by that or whatever. But I'm like, but what about black on black crime? I used to be that person, you know, I did used to be that person. And then you see enough of this over and over and you realize, oh, well, you know, there is no amount of degrees or respectability or money or acting a certain way that's gonna, you know, you don't wear your degree on the front of your shirt, you know, you don't wear your bank account on the front of your shirt. So,
and Facebook is a terrifying place for pretty much all social political issues. I mean, you know, most of the time I find people who I think are reasonable enough, but then there's just that whole dark side of Facebook.
Well, it's like I think what it is people just feel comfortable saying those innermost thoughts now, because you can easily find somebody who does agree with you. You're going to find a lot of people who don't, you know what I'm saying, on both sides of any issue, but you'll find your people. Whereas before, you just kept that shit locked up in your brain, whether it was the right thought or the wrong thought. It was just, you know, I'll keep it up here.
Because you don't have to be worried about being punched in the face on the internet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then that sort of gives we live, you know, in this sort of world where, like, you know, we're giving all opinions and all thought the same equal amount of weight, you know? And I think that, you know, for some things, there's not two sides, you know?
Yeah.
There are not two sides of that, you know? I don't have to hear your shitty ass opinion. That's not a real thing.
Yeah. So specifically, like, so I know that there's a lot of talk about the police right now, and I, from my understanding, is the police are clearly there to enforce and not protect or keep the peace. But, like, it's known to be a myth that is, like, not true, that they're there to protect.
Yeah.
That's known by some people, but not enough. So, but it seems to me like there, like, is a need for there to be a team or people that actually work towards peace. So I'm wondering, like, what do you think an alternative to the police would be? Like, is it just us, like, communities working together to protect each other, or does it need to be, like, a different team entirely?
I think so. I mean, what's true and what I tell people often is that, you know, the safest places in our country, the safest places in our nation, aren't places with more police. They're not, you know, it's not that these places have, you know, ramped up policing. So when people say, like, you know, we need to fight crime or, you know, fight poverty or whatever, and that solution includes more police, that's really like a Band-Aid solution.
Mm-hmm.
You know, while not addressing why crime is happening. Like, why is this a high crime area? You know, so it's like when you see places that are, you know, not as dangerous or low crime or whatever, these places don't have more police. They have more resources.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
For sure.
There are less reasons to even call the police, you know? I think personally, the police, there's two or three things we should do, right? We should abolish the police in most cases, because we see they're not protecting and serving a lot of places where they're at. Or divest. We're spending way too much money on police, you know, and they're not here in New York City. The number one arrest is fare beating, is jumping the turnstile.
Are you sure? I didn't know that.
The number one arrest in New York City is jumping the turnstile. Now, I mean, is that really dangerous to me or you?
Nope.
You know, why is that the number one arrest? You know, one of the number one crimes is still picking people up for marijuana, even though we have this thought in our mind that isn't. I tell people that all the time. People are like, isn't it free? I mean, or isn't it legal?
Or decriminalized?
Isn't it decriminalized? I'm like, no. For some people, it is. You know, yeah. And so you see, well, who's getting picked up for fare beating? Who's getting picked up for marijuana? And it's almost exclusively black and brown people, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, okay, well, this is not, we can all agree that that doesn't feel like protecting and serving.
Not.
You know, but that's where your money is going to. And
specifically the property taxes, which mm-hmm. are like rich people, typically.
Right, so that's not protecting and serving. So, I mean, should that really be a part of policing? And I think that we can't, if the problem is the system, there's institutionalized racism in our policing. That is
definitely,
that is just fact.
They've done psychological
right.
tests.
There's that's fact, right?
There is
institutionalized racism in our police system. Does the answer to that problem lie still within the system? I would say no.
Yeah.
You know,
you need to find alternatives.
Alternatives.
To
there are alternative solutions.
Mm-hmm.
We can look in other communities in our nation. We can look to other nations, and we see that, you know, this what happens in America just does not happen in other places.
What are some examples that you know? If you know any, because I don't. I'm just curious.
Oh, I mean, well, just the easy one to pull out, you know, is that the police aren't armed in the UK.
I didn't know that.
No.
I did not know that.
No, your regular beat police officer is not armed in the UK. Compare that to here in America, every police officer is issued a gun, but not every police officer has a taser.
That's ridiculous.
Every police officer has a gun, but not every police officer has pepper spray.
And they're also not trained to deal with conflict resolution, really, so or sexual assault.
It takes, on average, it takes 19 or 20 weeks to be a police officer in America. But it takes 18 months, 2 years to be a cosmetologist. You know?
That's insane.
And in this 20 weeks, the majority of your training is on different firearms and different, you know, shooting scenarios, and that there are some places in America where conflict resolution or conflict, you know, de-escalation training or those things are optional. You don't have to do them to be a police officer. But if you do take it, then that class may only be a day, a nine-hour class.
It's like an elective. It's like taking pottery in high school.
Mm-hmm.
That's insane. So you are saying that you think the police in Europe or in the UK don't have guns. But I've heard you say before you don't believe in police reform, right? You think it just should be something.
I think a lot of times when we say the word police reform or reform in general, it sounds good and we all like it on both sides, right? Like, okay, no, you know, one side is like, okay, we don't have to get rid of the thing. We can just change the thing. And the other side is like, okay, yeah, you're making some changes. And so that feels like a good, feel good, happy medium. But a lot of times what reform turns out to be is just more money.
Mm-hmm. You know? Oh, I hear what you're saying.
Yeah. Reform turns out to be, we need more training. Okay, cool. Yeah, you're right. You do. You need better training. You need more training. Well, in order for us to do more training, we need more money. You know, and it's like, on the surface, that sounds good, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But, like, the police budget here in New York City is, like, in the billions. You know, mm-hmm. like...
And then they just throw people in jail for nonviolent crimes.
Right.
And then they get more traumatized and then...
Like, I was on another podcast and I was talking to this guy and he was like, you know, well, don't you know, we can't get rid of the police. Don't you think we need a big police force in New York City or whatever? And I was like, you know, actually, you're right. I think, you know, the police are a more important they need to be a bigger thing here in New York City than they would be maybe like fly over middle of the country somewhere, right? That's just based on population, right?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, he's talking about terrorism, right? And I was like, but what does terrorism have to do with Eric Garner?
Nothing.
Right, you know? So I'm like, yeah, actually, the police budget in New York City, the police should be bigger because we are a terrorist target, you know, unlike other cities in this country or in the world, right? Mm-hmm. And we do need to fight terrorism. So when you say, give us more money to fight terrorism and domestic threats, you know, terrorist threats here and abroad, and we give you all this extra money, but then that money shows up at, you know, as riot suits at a peaceful protest, well, that's not what I paid for.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
You know? So a lot of times when you say the words reform, you know, that comes attached, you know, that comes with a price tag attached.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I give you that money, you don't use it right.
So you're against that price tag, not against the police maybe changing stuff or... I'm just trying to understand.
It would, you know, like, to me, it would have to be very radical. Because mm-hmm. we have to understand, like, we're dealing with a radical problem. Institutionalized racism means baked in, you know. And once you mix all the ingredients and bake a cake, I can't separate the egg back out of it.
Yeah, I hear that.
You know?
That makes a lot. That's why, I mean, I honestly have been thinking a lot about how I would rather my taxes go towards a team that is trained, that doesn't have guns, that's trained to deal with instances of sexual assault, mental health, and conflict resolution.
I mean, and that might be a whole other thing besides the police.
That's what I think. I think it should
be. You know?
Be.
That might be a whole other thing besides the police, or we have to change the way the police operate radically.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're dealing with such a deep and radical issue. It's not just, you know, take a fucking class.
Yeah. I mean, this other kind of team, I think a completely different personality type would want to do that.
I mean, well, and then that's another thing that's baked into the police. You know, a lot of police officers don't have college degrees, and they, you know, they're seeing that, you know, maybe going to college first would be better for you, you know, better for all of us. Or, you know, a lot of times they discourage certain personality types from, you know, more empathetic personality types, because it's two things. For one, they want you just to take orders. just take orders. Just do what you say. Just do what we say, you know? Mm-hmm. And so certain personality types that might question that or feel feelings. You know, we don't want you to feel too many feelings about this, you know?
That's so ridiculous. It's true, though. See, I would never want to be a cop, but this other kind of team, I would consider.
Right. And that's also why I disagree, or I don't really believe in the myth of the good cop, mm-hmm. you know? Because no matter what your good intentions may be going in or while you're there, you still are working within the confines of this system.
Mm-hmm. And if you rebel, you probably get fired, right?
Well, yeah, that's one of two things. Either you rebel and you get fired, or, you know, your good intentions are going to have to get adjusted. You have to go along to get along.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe for the most part you're a good cop or whatever, but when you're pressed, do you do the right thing? Because check this out. Just about every single police brutality video I see, you know, a cop losing their mind on somebody, and then another cop just standing there. So while you're not the cop doing that, you know, well, you wrote it up on the report the way that you were supposed to write it up to look good, you know.
They're breaking the Good Samaritan law there, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, you see in that video with Walter Scott, you know, that cop walks back over and grabs his gun or grabs his taser while the other cops are standing right there looking at and seeing what he's doing, and then he picks it up and moves it closer to the body. You know, he picks it up and moves it closer to Walter Scott. And they all wrote it up. All of them wrote it up to mirror and match this guy's report. And they were going to write that in stone if it wasn't for that guy off to the side secretly videotaping what happened. And so that goes to the importance of Cop Watch. So now you have a videotape that contradicts all these police officers, you know, accounts. Are all those cops good cops too? Are they still good cops?
No. No, I don't think
they weren't the ones who pulled the trigger or got into the fight or pulled Walter Scott over, but they also didn't call this guy out.
I mean, if you just stand there and watch violence like that, I don't think you're necessarily a good cop or necessarily.
I mean, but of course they didn't
person.
See the violence. They just walked up on the aftermath or whatever, but they did see him pick up a gun and move it. Is that a thing we do?
Well, I certainly urge people who are listening to think about what they think the answer to that question is. So now I'm going to be playing a song by Barefoot Falva. He's actually a pretty good friend of mine. He's an awesome musician. You can find him on SoundCloud.com, Barefoot Falva, or the songs I'm playing are from his BFF, Barefoot Falva, 365 project. I think he's going to do a new song every day. And this first one I'm going to play is from 227th Day, the 227th Day. It's called Meters. Thank you. All right, so again, I'm here with Elsa Waith. You're listening to What Would Save the World on Radio Free Brooklyn. And we were just starting to talk a little bit more about the situations where good cop, bad cop, how there really is no good cop. So, and how people have been filming the cops, and this is how cops are not getting away with some of their really crappy behavior.
So on Wednesday, November 16th, 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. at the Bureau of General Services Queer Division, 208 West 13th Street, room 210, Elsa Waith will be hosting a Cop Watch training seminar with Jose LaSalle, the creator of Cop Watch CPU.
Okay, so I want to know, for people who are listening, what is Cop Watch?
Yeah, so Cop Watch is... it's basically observing and documenting police conduct. It's used to help reduce police violence, police discrimination by observing officers, filming incidents, and holding police officers accountable for their behavior. In almost everywhere in this country, although they are trying to change that, which is why this is important, but just about everywhere in this country, it is legal and within your rights to observe, record, film all police activities in the public.
They're public servants.
Yes, they are public servants. They are to protect and serve. They are working for us. And so we are allowed to evaluate that job that they do. And it's also very important, you know, we see, like I was saying, how make or break, how important some of these videos have been. And I think, like, okay, unfortunately, in the case of Eric Garner, we had a video of his murder. And unfortunately, Officer Pantaleo, his killer, is still employed by the NYPD. He's not. He was not jailed.
He's still in that area?
I don't know.
Because I used to live in that area, and I was kind of freaked out all the time.
But it's unfortunate that in a lot of these cases, even still, we have video evidence, and there are no consequences. But what I would even say is as important as trying to document these things for legal purposes, I think it's also just important for... history. We are going to create a record of what's happening to black and brown communities, to minority communities. And that I just feel like, fuck, you know, as dark as it might sound, if they're going to kill us, they're not going to be able to do it quietly anymore.
Mm-hmm.
They're not going to be able to do it without audience anymore. What I teach people often is that a lot of your encounters with the police will not be deadly or dangerous, but that also doesn't mean that there isn't police misconduct happening. And that's where a lot of it is that we experience a lot of these smaller, you know, was this interaction racist? Was that not? And like, you know, like, ooh, or that was racist, or that was violating my rights, but you have a feeling of powerlessness. And Cop Watch is a great tool for empowering communities to, you know, to look after themselves and to... The police are watching us. Why are we not watching them?
Mm-hmm. Especially because if they're breaking all the rules, we need to make sure that they don't.
It's accountability is what it really is.
Yeah.
It's accountability. I'm not asking anybody to go out there and throw a camera in the cop's face or agitate, but you have the right to exercise it if you so feel.
Mm-hmm.
And how and what these trainings are is how to exercise this right to film, observe, and record the police effectively, legally, and safely for everyone involved, even the police.
So, so you see, you have some statistics here that let's see.
There are just statistics here in this pamphlet.
Yeah.
That I have.
People are listening; they don't know that I have it in my hand.
Yes. there's a little pamphlet, and these are statistics. But like, here's the thing: that even when police officers are indicted, they're indicted less than 1% of the time.
That's scary.
You know, 3 to 1% of the time when an officer kills somebody, they are indicted of any sort of crime. Anything. Not murder or manslaughter, nothing. But even in that 1 to 3%, it's only about 1% of those indictments that the officer ever sees any jail time.
What do they get, like suspension or something?
You know, you got Officer Peter Liang right now, who, you know, was indicted for killing a Kai Gurley. You know, here in New York City, in the past like 15 or so years, there's been nearly 200 people killed by the police, and there's been only 4 indictments. Only one of them, you know, this last one was the fourth, just recently with Peter Liang, and they. I believe they got him on manslaughter, which carries like a 15-year sentence, I think, at its maximum. And I think he's getting away with like house arrest and community service is what it was.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
I can't believe, man. So how long do you think this is going to last, where the cops just are really not held to accountability? Like, do you think,
it lasts for as long as we feel like it's acceptable.
So you think there needs to be like this like awakening of the masses, where people just realize that it's like, there's a lot of people coming to right now who are getting it, but not enough.
Yes, but it's a humanitarian crisis, mm-hmm. and we need the people at the top to understand that. There are 2 people a day killed by the police, you know, and if there were any other organization or institution killing 2 Americans a day. You know, ISIS doesn't kill 2 Americans a day. You know, and we're at war with them. We're dropping bombs and fighting ISIS. You know, this is a domestic humanitarian crisis. And, you know, and not to be flip about the rest of the world, you know, but like, this is happening in our streets. This mm-hmm. is happening here. How dare we try to tell somebody else how to live, and mm-hmm. how dare we, you know, be in other countries? And then, you know, how dare we, we're in an election cycle right now. We're almost done with this thing, you know, and anytime one of our candidates are discussing, Black people, it almost always seems to go to like black on black crime. And it's like, no, there is a crisis happening to Black and brown communities, and it's not something we're doing to ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
this is the police.
This is the arm of the government. You know, these are the jackboot thugs that the right wing is so afraid that Obama is going to be sicking on them. Well, it's happening to us first. You know what I'm saying? I'm like, if you're worried about, you know, they're coming for my guns, and the government's coming for me. Well, they're coming. They're already coming for us. They've been coming for us. You know, this is happening. This is already happening. This is a humanitarian crisis in our streets. How dare we talk about the economy and who I'm going to be voting for? When will I even be alive November to vote? You know, when 2 Black people, you know, like 2 people a day, the police kill 1 Black person, police, security, other vigilante, a Black or brown person is killed in vigilante action every 28 hours.
And people are just not listening. Or the people on top just don't seem to understand.
I mean, there seems to be a vested interest. There's a vested interest in continuing this. But it's when it becomes inconvenient to everybody, I guess. I don't know.
What do you think the vested interest is?
It's status quo. It's status quo. It's keeping candidate Trump says, the law and order. It's the order. It's keeping the order of things.
So just trying to keep the people on top who are on top, and trying to not actually work for the equality that America says it's about, that it's so clearly not about.
Which is why I'm like, you know, the solution for the system, you know, the solution for the sickness in the system will be coming from the system.
Mm-hmm.
So, which is why I teach these cop watch workshops, because should they never change another law, you know, should they never address this issue of police brutality, the citizenry should.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a way to, again, expose, film, document, and at least get it out there that what are things that are happening. And so it's going to be like an hour and a half, I'll be, you know, what to do. There's a little bit of know your rights too, mm-hmm. you know, like what to do if you are stopped by the police. how to navigate these situations, how to exercise your rights in those situations, and how to possibly help somebody out with a video or a record of things, what to do with these videos.
This music is by Barefoot Folly. You also heard his music earlier. You can find him on SoundCloud.com, Barefoot Follies. And then the intro music was by William Malsam. You can find him on SoundCloud.com also, Malsam. William Malsam and Barefoot Folly. All right, so we're back again. This is What Would Save the World. I'm Tuke Edelo. This is Radio Free Brooklyn. I'm here with Elsa Waithe, and we've been talking about activism, Cop Watch, and Black Lives Matter. So, Elsa, I want to hear a little bit more about what you think the movement needs to do to reach its goals.
Well, again, the goals are radical, so it won't be any one thing. Activism, radicalism, revolution is agitate, educate, organize. And so some people will be good at some things, some people will be better at others. It's really on an individual level. This is something everybody, in order to fix the ills of our society, we all kind of got to be on board on some basic things. But it's an individual effort. You know, people tell me all the time, like, Elsa, I'm coming out to a protest. I'm gonna come out to a march with you or whatever. And it's like, maybe not. Like, like, I don't think everybody needs to be out in the streets, but, I mean, that's nice. Everyone should, find some way to get involved. But even if your activism is just, like, where you should and shouldn't shop.
Mm-hmm.
I
hear that.
Exercising your dollar. Coming to a Cop Watch workshop and educating yourself on your rights. Be prepared. Know what to do. I heard someone, say that it's like we all kind of want to change the world in some way, and it's okay if your world is really small. It's okay if your world's only one person. It's okay if your world's yourself. We should always aspire to go bigger and deeper than that. But so just finding what little ways you can embody the ideals of the movement. I think there's a misconception that like Black Lives Matter is an organization, or that we have a leader, or that we have, directives or derivatives or whatever. There are some concrete things that other groups have come out, but like Black Lives Matter is like a set of ideals. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like, in a sense, like Christianity. Like, Christianity believes like some basic things about Jesus and God, and then you got all these other little denominations.
Yeah,
and
there's a lot of variety.
Right, exactly. And then they're all trying to get to heaven. So, the end goal of Black Lives Matter isn't actually just ending police brutality.
Mm-hmm.
That is a major part of it. But like Black Lives Matter is, are we healthy? Where do we get our food? Do you have a grocery store in your neighborhood? Do you know how to like read a fucking nutritional label? Do you know how to grow food? That's Black Lives Matter. Black Lives Matter is, mental health. Are we getting proper mental health? Do we have access to that? Do we have proper access to women's health, So Black Lives Matter isn't just police brutality. So the end goals of the movement, are, I think, could be very personal, very broad, or very specific.
Maybe not any specific end goal. Yeah. It's a long process, mm-hmm. and it'll always have to be better.
Yeah, I think so. I think we're seeing the, not I think, I know, this is the beginnings of something that will be ongoing for a very long time, very, very long time.
Definitely, and also alongside of the police brutality stuff, I definitely have to change the way the prisons are, the way the mass incarceration. I know that's like goes hand in hand.
Oh yeah, they're definitely hand in hand. Definitely hand in hand, because the police are used to fill up the jails, obviously.
Fill up the jails, and then when people get to jail, they put violent people next to non-violent people, and then it's just like, how is that supposed to fix anything? Something I think about a lot is how our prisons are like retributive. I can never say that word, but like there's no like restorative or transformation in prisons.
Right.
Like there's no progress there. It's just putting people in cells just to sit there, and there's no I mean, I know they do.
Or work you for free.
Work you for free. Yeah, so it's private prisons are slavery and probably some of the non-private ones too. I don't know enough about the non-private ones, but I know the private ones are slavery for sure. But I just wonder if, like, why there aren't more transformative programs. I mean, I get why, because people want to maintain the status quo. But I just, if somebody goes to jail, like,
I think it feels good. I think it just, I think some of the things we do that even, like, even that we know don't work, you know, it still just feels good, or that we all feel that it works, you know? Like, okay, check it. You know, when even the most progressive of us have said it, like, when a woman gets raped and they're you know, like, I hope that guy goes to jail and gets raped, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, like, I do hope he goes to jail, you know, but, like, there's that extra, and I hope he gets raped, too.
Mm-hmm.
It's that, like, I want to get you back. And some of that, that just exists in all of us.
Mm-hmm.
And as gross as that is, you know, like, that part of that exists in all of us, you know? And so it just feels like that does, it's a short-term thing. It's an easy answer. You know, you go to jail.
And that's
you fuck
it.
Up, you go to jail. Just go to jail. Get because it's more thought to like, oh, you're a drug addict. Well, that means you have trauma in your life and we should undo some of that and work that out. And yeah, you probably should be away from people for a while.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but all that costs more money too. You know, it costs more money up front, you know, to take care of you better.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to consider these things better.
Well, I say we take away the money from the cops and give it to those people.
And there it is. That's the divest part. So if we have a problem in this community where crime is high, you know, well, why is crime high? Could it be that there is not better education or better mental health?
Not enough facilities? Healthy food.
Not enough healthy food? Or, you know, is the environment toxic? Like, are there jobs and businesses here that people can work at and purchase and stimulate the economy? You know, like, what is going on in this neighborhood to why there is high crime? Well, it's very easy and very short-sighted, and it feels good and it makes sense. It feels good when you live in that neighborhood. You know, today there was a bunch of crackheads on the corner, and then the cops came through and arrested them, and now there's no crackheads on the corner. Like, that feels good in the moment, you know? Even though you may conceptually know that that doesn't help, or that they'll just be back, or
It'll be another person.
Like, you know that they didn't fix the issue. It just feels good.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it's a short-sighted solution. Taking care of people is expensive.
I mean, specifically, you were mentioning the, you know, I hope they go to jail and get raped also. That's an issue that's, like, I've been thinking about that a lot. Like, this is a little controversial. How many people do you think do things like that and are just severely, severely mentally ill?
Rapists?
Yeah.
I don't think it's,
doesn't excuse it, obviously.
I don't think there's any difference in the rates of people who are mentally ill who commit crime and people who aren't. I think that if you look at who's in our prisons, you will find a lot more mentally ill people. Than not. And that's because we have a hard time pinpointing mental illness, and then you do get to the point of criminality because we never addressed it. But are these people inherently criminal? You know, I don't know. That's hairs to split. I see what you're getting at there. I think a lot of things that we're, you know, calling people criminal for may just be unchecked, you know,
Mental illness, yeah,
divergence or whatever.
It doesn't. Yeah, I'm not trying to say specifically that kind of crime.
No, I see what you're saying though. But I think you would find the same or similar rates when it comes to rape as you would with, you know, murder or robbery or something. If you have proclivities to fucking, you know, if your mind is making you criminal. I don't think the actual crime. I don't know. I don't know what I'm saying here, but
I've just been thinking a lot about all of this stuff with all this because what's been happening, the stuff in the media with Trump saying this stuff about sexual assault, and then I'm just finding out that so many men in all these artistic communities that I'm in are just don't understand consent at all.
I think that's an education thing.
Yeah, that's what I.
I think that, you know, if I think that's something we should, if you are somewhere that teaches, you know, family, you know, sex ed or family planning or whatever, you know, your school district calls it or whatever. If you're learning about sex in school, why is that not part of it? You should learn about, you know, what is a sexual crime?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what is, if you're learning about how to have sex or your genitals or your body, you should know about what is absolutely not okay, you know?
Not just, like, sex. I mean, sex definitely, but, like, I've always wondered, like, why elementary school kids are not taught more, like, just consent in general. Like, don't take their thing unless they say it's okay. Like, consent, like, really young.
I think we are, but I think we excuse a lot of things, too.
Mm-hmm. Or we don't go hard enough on it.
Yeah. I think we excuse a lot of things, or we reward the wrong type of behavior.
Yeah. So we got a little bit off topic there. Yeah. Not really. I mean, it's all on topic, but I think that consent is, like, a really important topic right now.
I feel bad that a lot of people actually don't understand, you know, that's male and female, because you still see these, like, you know, women for Trump or whatever. They don't quite get what he's saying, or they've been gaslit or brainwashed into thinking.
Oh my God!
You know that, you know, they say, like, this is, you know, she says one of these women for Trump. You know, this is, that was a man talking in a man's world, and this is what men do. And it's,
oh,
like,
oh my God. Yeah, it's so scary. The conditioning's terrifying. There was this woman, I was watching a CNN interview today, where they were, the two reporters, whatever, were asking this woman, oh, why are you still voting for Trump after he said that? She said, well, it was a long time ago, and it's irrelevant. And then she starts trying to talk about how Hillary Clinton, you know, about Bill Clinton, and how her kids called it the oral office because the...
Yeah, I've seen that.
Yeah,
because that lady's crazy.
The report...
That lady's crazy.
The reporters were like, well, what about all the children who heard this and the boys, they're going to internalize this? Yeah. And they were just like, well, my kids didn't know that the Oval Office, I thought it was called the oral... I mean, there's a lot of allegations against Bill Clinton about him being a rapist, yeah, and I would believe that, but when people talk about the Monica Lewinsky to compare to Trump, it really bothers me. It's like, that was consensual.
Yeah, I mean, however inappropriate it was,
yeah,
you know,
it was like, extramarital, but it was consensual.
Yeah.
What happened to Monica Lewinsky after, if we want to talk about consent, that makes sense.
And the only other thing is, I mean, I don't know about, you know, rape or sexual assault in Bill Clinton's case or whatever, like, you know, again, wouldn't be super hella surprised. I'm not making any excuses for him or anything, mm-hmm, but he went through the ringer for a lot of that stuff. You know, mm-hmm, should he have really been impeached for an extramarital affair?
No.
You know, they said it's because he lied about it, but even still, do I have to tell you all about that or whatever? He was remorseful. He was repentant. They went through the impeachment process. That's one of the worst things that could happen to a president, you know? Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, you have Donald Trump, where it's like, nope, never did it. Nope, never did it. And actually, you, like, he's not...
Well, he's so fucked up.
Right. I mean, there'd be, it would be a little different if, I mean, I'm almost like, I wish he would just say I'm a sexist and a racist. And then I would respect that. Like, I mean, I wouldn't respect him, but, like, you would get a point for me. Like, cool. Cool, dude. Be bold with that. You're bold about every fucking everything else. You know what I'm saying? Like, be bold about it. Like, no, I don't like fucking Mexicans. I don't like fucking Muslims. Say that shit.
I'm a white supremacist.
I'm a white, you know, like, I mean, and here's the other thing. Do I think he's racist? I think he's racist-ish. Like,
really?
Yeah. I'm like, there's a lot of things that he could, or there's a lot of racist things around him that he can explain away. You know, that's the problem with calling somebody racist, is that no matter how fucking out of left field or how harebrained their excuses for their actions or their behavior or whatever, you can always kind of explain it away, you know?
Mm.
Unless I'm, like, saying, like, N-word this or N-word that, it's, like, hard to be, like, you're being racist, you know? Like, it's got to be super concrete.
And then people want to be like, oh, you're just pulling the race card.
Right, exactly. But if he's not, you know, he's has a hard time, or he's not denouncing the support of white supremacists, and he dabbles in things that are racist, you know? Like, so are you, maybe? maybe not, but you definitely don't, you know, distance yourself from these things. These things keep coming up and surrounding you. One of the allegations in the last couple of days amongst amongst sexual assault and inappropriate behavior around women was a black Miss Teen USA or Miss Teen America. One of these pageant contestants, and she was black, and everyone was like, "Oh, Donald Trump doesn't like black women." Like, other people were saying that to her, you know, like, "Oh, it's like lucky you're here," you know, like, she was the, it was like in the 2000s, she was the first black contestant.
Really?
Yeah, really.
So I don't pay attention to those pageants.
I don't pay attention to them either.
No, but I'm saying, like, that's shocking to me. I just, like, wouldn't know.
I don't pay attention to them either, but she's coming out as all these allegations are coming out. Now, does that make him racist? But, you know, like, these things keep... But these racist things keep coming out about
you. Sounds pretty racist.
So, you know, I'm gonna say at the very least, he's racist-ish. He's racist-ish.
I can imagine him saying it like that. Oh man,
is he sexist? Damn right. Like, I mean, and that's and that was another thing that, like, sexism is another thing that you can kind of have an excuse or try to explain away. But I think what's so damning about this tape is that, like, all year or all this candidacy, all this presidential run, the things he's been doing, you know, he can backtrack on, or he can explain away, or y'all didn't hear me right, or I didn't really mean that, or whatever.
And he's such a businessman.
Right, and he's such a businessman, but here you have him here, when no one's looking, and that's the test of your character and your integrity. This is what you are saying about yourself. And so there's been all these other things about you that say, you know, all these other peripheral things pointing at you that say you're sexist. And then here you are not denying that when you think no one is looking. In fact, you're kind of bragging about it. Mm-hmm. So I think that was what was so damning about that tape. It's not that he said pussy, you know, but, like, here you are dry snitching on yourself about sexual assault, you know, and here you, this is you.
Oh, he's so gross.
Yeah. So I think it's driving, like, is he sexist? Absolutely. Is he racist? He's racist-ish. And we're going to need one more tape of him maybe, like, saying the N-word or something just to put that nail in there.
Get ready to dance with RFB's newest partner, Secondhand Records NYC. It's the newest addition to our RFB studios in Bushwick, Brooklyn. Keep your party going with a collection of new and old 45s, LPs, and 12-inch singles at great Bushwick-friendly prices. Find your favorite vinyl dance hits from every generation, funk to house, jazz to techno, and all the beats in between. If you can dance to it, Secondhand Records NYC sells it. Visit the shop to buy, sell, and trade your favorite seven days a week. From 12 to 8 p.m. or shop anytime online at www.secondhandrecordsnyc.com. That's secondhandrecordsnyc.com, now located at the new Radio Free Brooklyn Studios at 1345 Decup Avenue, right next to the Central Avenue M stop in Bushwick. And while you're there, listen to some of the great music shows on Radio Free Brooklyn, or you can listen to our talk shows too, like this one.
All right, and we are back one more time. This is What Would Save the World. I'm Tuca Delo, and I'm here with Elsa Waith, Radio Free Brooklyn. So I want to ask you, so you're a comedian and also an activist. How do those two identities work together?
I'm a comedian first.
Oh, okay.
I'm a comedian first, and activism, like I said, it's kind of just fell in. But they are very similar. Some of the best comedians in our times are political, or are, you know, our comedy in this time is very political. You know, the our late night hosts doing a lot of political commentary. It all goes together. It's about speaking your truth and speaking about what's going on in your world. I'm a black queer woman, and these are the things that are going on in my world.
Cool. So that, yes, that makes sense. It's a lot similar. So I'm going to ask you one final question. So what do you think would save the world? I know that's very broad, but, you know, answer however you want.
Yeah. Well, I think in regards to white supremacy, police brutality is an arm of that. I think in regards to white supremacy, what's going to save the world? White people got to, like, step up and fix their shit, you know? Like, you know, when people say, like, what's the solution to police brutality? The solution to police brutality is fixing white supremacy. What's the solution to fixing white supremacy? Well, actually, I don't know that. And it's not required for me to know that because I didn't create white supremacy. Black people didn't create it. Like, here's some suggestions, dog. But, y'all, you know, white people got to do that. You know, I didn't put myself on a boat and oppress myself and subjugate me and my people to, you know... I think black people's only thing is just to continue to live our best life and resist. Asada says it is our duty to fight for our freedom. So that's what we got to do. We got to fight for our freedom. We've always resisted. In the time that we first were shackled and put on boats to come to America, civilizations have been completely wiped from the face of this earth. And we are still here. So we've done a very good job of fighting and resisting. That's all we just got to do. We didn't create this. So I don't know what saves the world. Or as far as in respects to white supremacy. I don't know.
And I hear what you're saying. I mean, I know that white people need to do a lot of educating themselves.
Most of it. All of it.
Yeah. I mean, definitely. I mean, it's ridiculous to me how many white people I meet who are just afraid to admit they might be wrong about something.
Yeah. And I mean, and I was on a panel earlier this week, and the topics, obviously, you know, it's a political panel. So, I mean, I just don't understand how people are talking about politics and not getting kind of racial. But, you know, it got heated, tense for a moment. And it was like, oh, this is a difficult topic. And I was like, we need to stop saying that, too. It's not a difficult topic. We are making it difficult because what it is if we talk about race and our biases and thoughts and how we can fix some of these things, a lot of us are going to have to admit that we got shit wrong. Mm-hmm. And then that's uncomfortable, A, just to think that, maybe I'm wrong. And then the second thought is, do I continue to be wrong or do I do something? And then the third thought is, well, if I do something, that means work and effort and possibly doing the wrong thing. And, you know what I'm saying? And not getting it right for a while. And having to go through that many thoughts and actions, fuck it. This is difficult. This conversation is difficult. This is too big of a problem.
This is too uncomfortable for me. This is uncomfortable. I don't want to have to think about oppression right now.
Yeah, everyone's a little racist, and all these problems are always going to exist, and
It's so defeatist.
It is. It's very defeatist. Well, really what it is it's cowardly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I hear that.
That's what I said. It's like, it's cowardly for you to not want to have a conversation, for words to be hard for you to do. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, fuck, if we have this conversation, you don't never change a goddamn thing about you, but for you to not even be able to talk.
Why are you talking about politics then? You can't, like,
why are you able to talk? How do you have a job? How are you able to function in the world if you're not able for someone to tell you that, hey, maybe this is wrong. Hey, maybe do better. Well, then that's cowardly. That's cowardly on the highest level. Because that's saying, I'm saying, all I'm asking you to do is to respect me and consider me. And if you can't have that conversation with me about how you respect me and consider me, you're selfish and cowardly.
And then, and again, like, why are you part of politics? Because, I mean, I guess I always think of politics, and I know that this is a naive thing to think of. Politics are supposed to be about making the world or the country, whatever place you're in,
making the system better, whatever that system is. That's whether it's office politics or, you mm-hmm. know, team politics, whatever the system is, the politics are about making
it better, this is my goal, is to make it that resources are managed efficiently so everybody can have the proper access to it. I think that's a big part of politics. And you need to talk about race, and you need to talk about gender, and you talk about all this stuff to do that.
Making everything better. Not the best, right? Because, like, you know, at Mo at the experiment.
Where the Cop Watch seminar was that I went to, but you should go to the other one that's going to be on November 16th, 7 p.m. to 9 p.m.
What Mo says is he's trying to build a community that's a safer space.
Mm-hmm.
There's no such thing as a 100% safe space,
mm-hmm.
you know, so I don't think that we'll ever have a system that, you know, will be looking out for all people at all the time, but we damn sure can do a fuck ton better than what we're doing now.
We can
now.
Be talking about improving it all
yeah.
the time,
why,
too.
Yeah, fuck, why can't we at least even talk about it, you know? Like, we'll never, ever get to fixing it if, like, the moment the conversation comes up, like, ooh, too uncomfortable, save it for later, talk about it later.
Save it for later when I'm not here.
Mm-hmm. So we've got to stop saying that conversations about race or conversations about gender or just conversations about equality in general are difficult. They're not. You just don't want to have them.
I mean, they're all so relevant because... So this is sort of my thing. You know how people are... Do you know what libertarians are?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, libertarians, they claim to be socially liberal and economically conservative. And to some of the ways they want to structure the economy, to me, sound like it could easily be discriminatory.
Oh, I mean, yeah.
So it's like they're not even acknowledging how much economic policy does go back to race and gender. People don't want to acknowledge that they're not that separate.
Yeah, I mean, equality and equity are two separate things. I mean, we could start off on the same level playing field, but what are the obstacles? You know, so sure, everything's free and open and let it run how it runs, but, you know, all that sounds good on paper.
I mean, but especially when, like, the free market, when people don't want to regulate anything.
Capitalism is racist. Like,
I agree.
There has to be... a disadvantaged party in order for capitalism to work. The money has to go from A to B. The resources have to go from A to B. And, you know, hopefully B is getting more than A, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that's how that works.
Yeah. Man, however, we gotta take down capitalism. We gotta stop being so defeatist. We gotta have the hard conversations. We have to be okay with feeling uncomfortable. We have to be okay with admitting we might be wrong and trying to be right and realizing we might be wrong again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think we just have to start. It starts with every individual. And I think it just has to be what can I do today?
Take some responsibility, people. All right. So we're going to close off.
So I think that everybody who has the time and cares about it, which you should go to the Cop Watch seminar, which is going to be on Wednesday, November 16th from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m., and that is at the Bureau of General Services at Queer Division. It's 208 West 13th Street, room 210, and Elsa Waith is going to be hosting that with the Cop Watch Patrol Unit CPU founder Jose LaSalle. It's at the details about it on the Facebook event. Our Cop Watch is an effective and legal tool for empowering communities, ending police misconduct, unprofessional behavior, and discrimination. You have the right to observe and record all police activities in public places. Learn how to exercise your rights safely and legally. Workshop will be taught by a comedian, activist, Elsa Waith, and da-da-da. So you should really go to this. I went to the one that was at the Experiment Comedy Gallery, which is at 272 Grand Street basement level. You should go to the Experiment more. There's some great open mics and some great shows we were talking about a little bit earlier. But I went to see this, and I was very inspired, and it's extremely educational. I think that they put on a great, great seminar. But also, Elsa has a monthly show that is called Affirmative Laughter, that it's at the Experiment. It's on a Saturday night at the Experiment. You should look into that. You should like the Experiment on Facebook. But I really, really recommend going to see this Cop Watch seminar, or participating in this Cop Watch seminar. I really, really, really highly recommend it, and you'll be able to find all the information on this on my Facebook page, facebook.com/whatwouldsavetheworld, also on my Twitter, which I'll mention in a little bit. But it is on November 16th, 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. at the Bureau of General Services, Queer Division, 208 West 13th Street, room 210, hosted by Elsa and Jose LaSalle. They're fantastic.
So you've been listening to What Would Save the World. Thank you, Elsa Waith, for coming on here and sharing all your thoughts.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate
I'm
you
glad,
so much.
Really glad that you were able to come on. I've been wanting you to come on since I started the show, but
thank
scheduling.
You.
So you can check out What Would Save the World at facebook.com/whatwouldsavetheworld.
Oh, follow me on Twitter at Elsa, just Elsa.
Yeah, follow her. And you can also follow me at the number 2, like the symbol KEDALOW, the same thing, 2KEDALOW @gmail.com. Send me your thoughts if you agree with me, disagree with me, think I should cover a topic. Thank you for listening. This has been What Would Save the World on Radio Free Brooklyn.
Dope.